Hello, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. If you'd like, please call in at 520-790-2040. How was everybody's thrilling weekend beginning on Saturday afternoon?
Oh, you're just mean.
Maybe some people enjoyed it. Maybe some people didn't.
Mine was great. I went to the movies.
You did? So when you got out of the movies, what'd you feel?
It was horrible. I made the mistake of checking as the credits rolling by what the score was. And I showed it to my wife. I said, oh, man, this is horrible.
Yeah, well, you didn't even see the game.
No.
So you didn't realize how horrible it was.
Well, the 1 point difference, I was just thinking, well, as I told you when we started the show, there's always basketball season.
Yeah, it's funny because someone said that on Facebook. Well, at least we have basketball, and then realized what he had said. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks.
It's very torturous. Torturous weekend for Arizona fans in that Arizona had them on the ledge. And that was for, let's see, 45, maybe about 52 minutes of the 60-minute game. And then it all unraveled. As I said in my story, unraveled like a cheap Christmas sweater. I get those often.
An ugly one, yes. Cheap Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, someone pulls that string and it goes to nothing. But we'll talk about that. I mean, that's kind of being the gist of the show today. I thankfully have the Arizona Daily Star's Michael Lev on the show. He'll talk about his situation and cover the team for the whole year, not specific to this day or Saturday, but the whole season. I think it's his second full year. In the new hour, at the 2 o'clock hour, we're going to have Doug Haller. Out of Phoenix, he used to be with the Arizona Republic. Now he's with the Athletic. Good writer, good guy. And then at the end of the 2 o'clock hour, at 2:30, we're going to have David Kelly from Channel 13, KOLD, get his insight on what the heck happened on Saturday. He does a lot of the breakdown stuff on his show and kind of does not he does analysis, play analysis, and things like that. His dad is a former, he's a Hall of Fame football guy, NFL football Hall of Famer. So we'll go there. I just wanted to start with football. Obviously, it was not a good look all the way around, in as much as Khalil Tate looked like he hadn't grown up yet in his press conference. I had seen that look from him before. Not a shock to me. I'm sure Michael Lev will talk about that. And Sumlin was, I guess, okay in the press conference. He said what he thought he had to say, and it was still strange and unexplainable on the 2 points that he gave up on the extra points that he never went for. We'll talk about that as well. I do have a thought on that, in as much as Arizona kind of picked up those points in the safety they got earlier in the game. So I'm not so concerned about the two extra points, because circumstances of games change when you score, if that makes any sense. I don't know, like people say, well, had you done this, had you done that? Well, I often say, well, had I left the house earlier today, 10 minutes earlier, I may have been in that crash to get here, or whatever. It is what it is.
So you're saying if they didn't get the safety, they would have crashed anyway?
Something would have happened, or circumstances would have been different. Who knows? Had they gone for the points, maybe they didn't need the points. That, you know, it's, you never know until you need them at the time, because you can look back and say, well, they didn't get the points. Well, yeah, but they got two back on the safety.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
it's too bad they didn't give out 4 points.
Right,
safeties.
Right. It's just bizarre. I know Anthony Jamino and I were talking about the beginning of the fourth quarter, thinking the ASU was all but out of it, because we were thinking that there was still a chance. And I said, well, you know, you have to have two touchdowns and the 2 point conversions successfully, but then they went for a field goal in between those two touchdowns, so there went the extra points. It was just a bizarre game. And what we talked about all week last week was how bizarre the game is.
Oh man!
Every year, seemingly a weird thing happens to make things weird.
Yeah.
I mean, this case was the. Oh man, and Arizona did a great job. Their wide receiver did not have a great game. He just declared for the NFL. They kept their running back in check. They did everything they had to do to win that game, and then just fell apart.
Yeah. And when was the point where they started to fall apart exactly?
The last 10 minutes. You think that there's just no way, because things would have to fall perfectly for them to make it happen. And guess what? they started to happen. Everything that had needed to happen happened. Khalil threw that interception, ill-advised interception that he didn't talk about, and then J.J. Taylor had the fumble, and then Arizona couldn't stop them, and then the missed field goal.
I'm so glad I was in the movies.
Yeah, you know,
Ralph wrecks the internet. It sounds like you guys are kind of watching the same movie.
Oh, so you were, I was going to say, was it the Titanic? What were you watching?
Ralph wrecks the internet. Oh, yeah. So, you know.
Great. That's intellectual people.
Yes. Yeah. That was me and my family. So.
Yeah. Well, Father of the Year, you get my vote.
Thanks.
I just took it away from somebody and gave it to you. unbelievable weekend. Basketball returns to action on Thursday after their mini, whatever you want to call it, in Maui. They won one and lost two. Now they have to rebound and play a mediocre Georgia Southern, I think it is, on Thursday. So there's football's over. There's no bowl game to worry about or to be concerned with. As people say, oh, it's just going to be a mediocre bowl anyway. Well, wouldn't you rather go to the dance and not go to the dance?
Yeah. Well, it's nice being asked to dance anyway. What bowl would they have made it if they had actually won?
Probably the one in Phoenix, and I forget what, the Cheez-It Bowl or something like that. It's something very minimal.
Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah, no, not the Fiesta Bowl. Let's not get carried away. Do they do drug testing here?
You said cheese, and I thought you were being sarcastic.
No, sorry. No, I'm being serious. Yeah, yeah. Your festival coming now. That must be very sarcastic.
The Cheez-It Bowl? Is it actually a bowl called the Cheez-It?
Yeah, sure. I think so. I'm pretty sure that's what it was, or it is.
Nacho Cheese Bowl.
Nacho Fantastic. Cheese, yes. It's nacho cheese. I hope we get some calls early before, so you know, we can talk about the disaster that was, because it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And Arizona played so well, too. It's disheartening for the players that you know and love because they played hard and then just couldn't come through at the end. On what was a fantastic weather day, what was a fantastic game day. How else could you have scripted it? Fantastic day to watch football.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was on the phone with a caller.
Please. What,
you're not talking about Saturday was a great day for
football.
No,
it was a great day to be outdoors to watch football.
Yeah.
70 degrees, perfect weather, no wind.
I watch fishing in the morning. I probably should have stuck with that.
All day, fishing in the movie. Yeah, we got Frank on the line? Yeah, great. Thanks for calling, Frank. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm still pretty upset. First, I was sad, and then I was mad at some of the play calling.
Yeah.
But... one big question that kind of continues, there's a lot of what-ifs, but one big question is, why didn't Khalil Tate run more? Why didn't they have design plays like Rich Rod had for him last year? Tate did run a few times, but most of those were when he couldn't find the receiver.
Right. Are you talking specific to Saturday or the season?
Saturday. Well,
'cause it could apply to both.
Yeah, well, I know he was injured part of the season, so let's just stick to Saturday. Yep. And there were some times also besides the design plays where he rolled out, he couldn't find a receiver right away.
Yeah.
And he could have run. There was open,
sure.
There was open turf, maybe 8, 10, 12, yep. 15 yards.
Right.
And he didn't do it.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question and a valid question. Because we in the media thought the same thing, and I'm thinking it for the whole year. There was a reason why he didn't run. I thought it was more so not to get hurt, not to continue to get hurt, because he's a firm believer that he can pass the ball. I don't know how he believes that or what he wants to believe with that. Michael Lev will probably talk more to that earlier or later, but I agree with you. There was a play there specifically where he had about 20 yards that he could have easily run and picked up the first down and kind of held the ball and killed some more of the clock. But I think it may have been even that interception that he threw, because he had somebody wide open as well. He had somebody who was wide open down the field, maybe another 20 yards, and he had a big space where he could run, and he chose not to run. Your question is a valid one. There's only one person that would be able to answer that, and that's Khalil. And he refused to answer questions of Michael Lev, and that was been consistent all year. It was a strange year from start to finish. That's all I know.
Well, at the beginning, it looked like in the first game, it looked like he had been told not to run and try to establish the passing.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that. You're right.
then the injury occurred, and you know, I understand not running when you're injured. But I don't know, on that last pass to Berryhill, which could have been a touchdown, but he had a good 12, 15 yards to run on that, and it would have put him closer to the field goal.
Yeah.
Anyway, ask Michael about that and kind of ponder it, because I think it's a big question. And
Frank, you're on the money.
Coming back.
You're on the money. You're on the money. He made some weird decisions all year. I think he came back to the season, the beginning of the year, thinking that he wanted and needed to throw to show that he could throw the ball at this level, to help him get to the next level. It was funny because, and I'll admit this when Michael's here, that I kind of gave up on this team a long time ago. One, because Khalil had, after his first game, I think he threw 34 passes, and I asked him, was 34 passes too much, especially for you? He kind of came back with a sarcastic remark to me in terms of that's what quarterbacks do, and I'm thinking, in my head, I'm thinking, but that's not what you do. You're a runner. You're a running quarterback. And that's kind of where it all kind of started falling apart for me in the season with him. So, you know, I think he was dead set on showing that he could use his arm. And didn't need his legs. But all year, if you saw him run, he ran out of bounds a lot. He didn't get in trouble with his legs in terms of trying to get extra yards. It was a disaster of an attempt at him not running, and I don't know why.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Frank. But stay tuned, because I'll be asking Michael those questions and specific to your question. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's good. I enjoyed the calls because, you know, it's good to talk to the fans, which I'm sure, like many others, are very disappointed.
He sounded like he was going through the seven stages of grief there. By the way, Frank, you'll eventually get to acceptance, but it may not be next year.
Yeah, right. Hey, let's go to break and get Michael back or on the line over the on the other side.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs, and who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? You look familiar.
That's right, I'm Sheriff Napier.
Gosh, it's great to see you.
Hey, you're Ken Flower. Aren't you wanted?
I'm speechless.
That's right, everybody wants Arizona Party Rental.
Hey, you can join the party too. Arizona Party Rental, just west of Alvernon on Speedway, or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
Offense comes to the line. The ball is snapped. Sweep toss to the halfback. Trick play. He's going to throw it. Taking a shot deep. It's tipped and intercepted by Crest Insurance.
Wow, what a play by Crest Insurance. Nobody saw that coming, but Crest had the coverage in place that avoided a disaster. That's the benefit of an experienced team. Great coverage when it matters most.
Whether it's home, auto, or your business, the team at Crest Insurance makes all the difference. For outstanding coverage when you need it most, go with Crest Insurance.
Hey Tucson, it's John and Cheryl Hulcock with Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. We are so thankful for the sacrifices of our military and their families. That's why we are certified relocation specialists for USAA and Navy Federal members.
I don't know, but I've been told the Hulcock team can get your home sold.
You just promoted us with a military cadence?
Ma'am, yes ma'am.
Okay, just stop.
Call 342-6586 to get the best of your home picks.
Company Hulk.
Hoorah!
Oh brother.
Hello, I'm Ed Begley, Jr., and wherever you call home, the sounds of wildlife connect you with a greater family of life. That's why you shudder each time you see woods, marshes, meadows, or grasslands being destroyed. You know that countless birds and other wild animals are losing their homes, the greatest threat to their survival. Among the growing number of threats to wildlife, habitat loss is the most devastating. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust offers a humane solution, working with private landowners to protect habitat as permanent safe havens for wildlife. When you hear the familiar wild voices you love, remember, your voice is the one that can speak for wildlife and for the land they call home, ensuring that it stays forever wild. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, visit wildlifelandtrust.org.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on sports.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm lucky to have Michael Lev on the line now. Are you there, Michael?
I am, Steve. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good to have you here. And I just got off the phone with a caller asking why didn't Khalil run more? And I said, are you talking for the season or for the game? I know you asked that question a number of times. Why didn't he run more, Michael?
It's a complicated question.
Exactly.
So, let's get into it, though. I mean, I think part of it was the injury, you know, that happened very early in the second game of the season.
Yes.
I think the first game was more of a game plan type of deal. Got hurt early in the second game, didn't feel quite comfortable. I think that was a factor. I think another factor is that he wanted to prove to everyone that he could be, you know, a pocket style, NFL style quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And he was determined to do that, even if it, you know, kind of work to the detriment of the team. So I think those were kind of the two biggest things that were involved in that. And I think once he came back from the injury, you saw a different player. He was a more willing runner in those games and had a lot of success doing it. I'm just not sure that anything he could have done would have satisfied the fans who saw him, you know, rush for 1,400 yards last season.
Right, right. Now, specific to Saturday's game, he had a chance to run at least a couple of times where us in the media thought maybe he could gain a number of yards, but he chose not to.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that the interception,
yeah,
you know, might have been an example of one of those. You know, rewatching the play, I mean, I thought he easily could have just dumped the ball off to Sean Poindexter, who, I mean, if he didn't get the first down, would have been close. Even if he didn't get the first down, it would have been way better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you punt the ball, you're probably going to get, you know, an additional 40 yards there that, you know, ASU would have to navigate to score again. It's obviously a critical decision and ended up costing them in a big way. You know, it's easy for us to say from the press box or watching on TV, oh, he should have thrown this pass, he should have run in this situation. I will say that it's surprising that he didn't take advantage of running opportunities more often. And I think part of that is that he had so much success throwing the ball down the field. You definitely want your quarterback when he escapes the pocket to look to pass first. And he so often this season was able to chuck the ball downfield. He obviously has a great arm in terms of arm strength, and he's pretty accurate throwing downfield. He had so much success, you know, with those kind of schoolyard, you know, hey, just go long type plays. And I think he kind of fell in love with that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up biting him at the end.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you two odd questions, and I have a reason for them, because you're there every day, and you know, you get a sense of what's going on. What is your relationship with one, Khalil, and two, Sumlin?
Okay. Khalil, I wouldn't say that my relationship with Khalil is all that great.
Right.
At the moment. His media exposures have been limited primarily to post-game settings. And just to sort of explain to people, like,
right. That's why I wanted to put
challenging.
I want to put into context.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Why that's challenging is that usually he's up there with other people, and it's a kind of a staid press conference type setting. And you can't, and there's really not an opportunity to get into, to have like a conversation.
Right.
You know,
right.
Those, when they would give us the players on Tuesdays this year, at the Sands Club, and we could just talk to them.
Right.
It was one-on-one. It was one-on-one on the group, but only one player at a time, and you get them for 6 to 8 minutes, and you could just kind of have a conversation. When you talk to a player after a game, it's usually just about the game. And like I said, he's often up there with other people. And frankly, you know, when they lost, and he didn't play well, and he got asked specific questions, usually by me, about, you know, negative plays.
Sure.
He didn't handle it very well.
No.
You know, he would sort of give non-answers, or he would brush it off or laugh it off. And I got to tell you, for someone who, you know, I believe has NFL aspirations, that's not a very good look.
No, I totally agree with you.
You have to be responsible and you have to be accountable, especially when you're the quarterback.
And I ask because I think my guess, if I were to guess how many times you specifically, because like I say, you were there more than most, if not every day, maybe a handful of opportunities to talk to him because they rarely brought him in post game, and you rarely had him otherwise. I mean, on Tuesdays, I probably don't think he showed up once.
I could tell you exactly how often we talked to him. He was made available to us one time in training camp.
Yeah, I remember that. I was there.
I think he was one of the guys they brought out at the end of spring when they brought a handful of players up to the podium. So that's two times. And then I think after almost every game, at least the games in which he played. So that was it. And there were no Tuesdays, because, you know, I guess they figured that he was doing his duty. On Saturdays, even though, like I said, it's not the same. I did request that he be made available on the Tuesday coming out of the bye.
Mm-hmm.
That request was denied. So it was kind of rocky at times,
right.
With him. And I feel like if he decides to come back here, that it's really something that he should put some effort toward working
right,
on.
Right.
You know, you really need to be better in those types of situations. You know, the NFL people, they look at everything.
Oh, sure.
And they're going to look at that too.
Sure. And I understand the question about whether he was coming back or not, which was a great question, only because it's very likely now that the season's over, your access to him or to Sumlin or to whomever is going to be limited, if at all.
Thank you for bringing that up. I hadn't raised that point to some people, just a handful of people on Twitter who were kind of questioning why I asked that, but one of the reasons I did ask it is, yeah, I don't know when I'm going to get another shot.
Right.
You know, because their access to returning players is very limited. It was also in the context of him saying that this program had a lot to look forward to.
Right.
You know, and so then I immediately followed up with, you know, do you expect to be a part of that next year? And then he just said, next question, which was kind of a peculiar response.
Peculiar response after not answering the first two questions at all. He could have just said, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's the second time that I've asked him specifically about an interception, and he just didn't
right.
really know what to say or have anything to say. I mean, I don't think it would be that hard to just say, you know what, I messed up. I got greedy there. I should have checked the ball down. It was a bad decision.
Sure.
It was my fault. I'll try to learn from this. I mean, you can say any of those things, whether you really, you know,
believe it or not,
believe it or feel it or not, but it just, I think it just sends a better message to the world and to your teammates.
Right, right. At some point, and I remember your first question maybe 2 months ago, I was in that press conference because I had asked him a question as well, and then he kind of blew me off and asked me a question. And when I'm part of the story, I'm not part of the story. I just said it's not for me to answer. And you came back with a follow-up, which was great. But I was surprised that the U of A, such that it is, didn't step in and say at that time, kind of, you need to kind of answer some questions. I know that's asking.
I know
that's asking a lot, but
yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It's difficult. We don't know, you know, what goes on behind the scenes, but I think the one thing they could do is to do a better job of just training.
Yeah,
the guys.
I said
know?
That on Twitter yesterday.
Like, have them go through a mock press conference,
right?
You know, or some other type of training exercise, just so they'd be better prepared for those situations. You know, I heard the excuse, you know, earlier in the year, oh, he's 19 years old, blah blah. I mean, I don't buy that at all.
I don't either.
Junior in college, this is not his first rodeo. He was in plenty of press conferences last year. And, you know, when you're the quarterback, I mean, you have to be able to handle losing as well as winning.
No question.
You know, and one thing I'll give a lot of credit to Kevin Sumlin for this year is you couldn't tell a lot of times after a game whether Arizona had won or lost.
True.
Well, his demeanor was basically the same. No matter what happened, he's always calm and cool and rational.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that the administration wanted to bring him in here, because they had seen how his predecessor had handled some of
right.
his losses, and obviously he didn't handled them very well.
No question. Compared to Rich Rod, his demeanor was a good flat line compared to Rich's, you know, up and down modes. Hey, I'm sure you can hang on for a while. We're going to go to break here, and we'll talk more about situations and then maybe finally the football game. Thanks a bunch, guys.
Next year's fondest memories begin with this year's Lexus December to Remember sales event. Right now, get Lexus cash and dealer discounts on all models with up to $11,000 off the new 2018 LS500. Get incredibly low interest rate financing and exceptional lease offers on your favorite models. Hurry in. All offers on approved credit and expire 12/3/18. See dealer for details at Lexus of Tucson on Speedway at Columbus, at the Auto Mall, or lexusoftucson.com. Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized as the number one credit union across all of Arizona by Forbes. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer higher savings rates, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit hughesfcu.org/bestcreditunion. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
Aw, you know kids will be kids.
Oh, I don't know why they're trying to make a big deal of it. It's just a harmless rite of passage.
If she didn't want to be picked on, she shouldn't wear that thing on her head.
If he's going to dress that way, he's just asking for the extra attention.
It's just a stage. All kids face some bullying. They'll get over it.
That girl, she just brings it on herself. I don't feel bad for her at all.
It's just a stage. All kids face something. It's just a stage.
It's just a harmless rite of passage.
Don't validate. Eliminate. All students in Arizona deserve a safe learning environment without the threat of bullying. I'm Joe Thomas, president of the Arizona Education Association. It's up to us as educators, as parents, as adults, to stand up on behalf of bullied students. Identify, intervene, and advocate. One caring adult can make all the difference.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree, a message from the Arizona Education Association.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Wake Up Tucson with Christy Simone.
Hey, it's Chris from Wake Up Tucson. Join us for a big Tuesday show. We start off with Juan Siscomani from the governor's office. We get our first weekly call from Steve Rivera talking about U of A sports. Elizabeth Klingler and the folks from Turner Classic Movies, and Craig Cantoni talks about how the county looks like crap. Wake Up Tucson, you're on 1030 KVOI, trusted local news and talk.
Wake Up Tucson, mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1030 KVOI, the voice.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on Tucson.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm on the phone with Arizona Daily Star's Michael Lev. He does a great job covering the football team. So answer, if you could, the second question. What's your relationship with Kevin Sumlin?
Yeah, I would say that it's pretty good. A lot of the reporters have been joking throughout the latter half of the season that Kevin would refer to me by my first name at times. Yes, he'd say Mike, and really wouldn't say that to anybody else. I don't totally know what all that's about, but I'll kind of take it as a sign of respect.
I would. I would, Mike. I would.
Yeah. He had, like I said, I give him a lot of credit for the way he's handled himself after losses. He's answered every question that's been thrown his way. And if there were questions that he didn't really want to answer, he's polite about those. He did give a couple of one-on-one interview opportunities, early on in the off season in the spring, shortly after he got here. His media exposures were somewhat limited. Afterward, I mean, we had become accustomed here in Tucson and certainly when during my time covering USC to having the coach available after every single practice,
sure.
every single spring practice, et cetera. Kevin Sumlin did not do that. He talked at the beginning of spring and at the end of spring. He talked, about once a week on average or so during training camp. And then, of course, you know, he did his Monday thing and his press conferences after games. I would obviously like to talk to him more. I do understand where he's coming from, though, that it does become kind of repetitive to hear the head coach say the same thing over and over. What will be interesting to see, you know, going forward is, you know, once this honeymoon period ends, you know, how does Kevin's mood change at all?
Yes.
You know? Will he remain the same? If things don't go well, how will he handle that? I would say based on this initial experience that he'll probably handle it pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. My whole thing is, and you're exactly spot on with your comment with him. I have my only issue is when he says a lot but doesn't say anything. And I'm sure that makes your job hard because you're coming up with the stories and everybody else is kind of following your lead with your questions. But he says, you know, you have 20 minutes, but then you go through the notes and there's nothing said. But that's just my thought.
I would say he's diplomatic, about certain things, you know. I felt like his best responses, especially once he got to know the team better, were when you'd ask him about a specific player.
Yeah.
You know, like talking about J.J. Taylor or Sean Poindexter or P.J. Johnson. I got the sense that, like, he started to feel a lot more comfortable in terms of the personnel he had and was therefore able to make, you know, more informed comments about them. And I feel like, you know, and I do spend a lot of time doing this, Steve, as I'm sure you know, from being in the business, I spend a lot of time kind of strategizing
yes.
what questions to ask and
yes.
how to ask them. And I think that would be a good track to follow upcoming here in the future, you know, to kind of steer things a little bit more in the personnel direction.
Sure, sure. No, because you have to handle your stories that way. You know, thinking ahead, thinking what you need to write for today and then save for Thursday and all that stuff. It's very difficult, especially when you have someone who doesn't say a whole lot. You kind of have to save and tweak and all that stuff. Yeah. Okay, so we know about your relationship with them too, and I get it, which is spot on. Now to the football season. I know you've graded the teams individually after each game, and I saw this week's spot on. What about the year for Kevin Sumlin? How would you grade him for the year?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously this year was disappointing. Expectations were really high.
Yep.
People, you know, had a vision for what this team could become based on, you know, the promising signs that were shown last year, and then also what Kevin Sumlin had done in the past with
right.
quarterbacks like Case Keenum and Johnny Manziel, and everyone just figured, oh, you know, Sumlin plus Tate, you know, equals success.
Sure.
And it didn't happen for a variety of reasons. One of them was Tate, you know, not being totally healthy. One of them was, you know, Tate having some difficulty adapting to the system. Another one was, you know, some offensive line issues that weren't anticipated, such as, you know, Nathan Eldridge being out for the season because of a knee injury. And then also Leif Freck, we knew he'd be out for the first two games, and then he comes back and gets hurt. And then also missing Jace Whitaker on defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a vastly underrated player. Not only is a good player, but a really good leader, a tough guy, really smart player, someone whose leadership was really missed. So, taking all of those things into consideration, the grade, you know, is probably in the, I don't know, the C-minus range, and it would have maybe been in the B-minus range if they had just figured out a way to win that last game, because to me and to a lot of people, you know, I think the perception of the entire season hinged on that game.
Yep.
And if they had found a way to win, you know, I think a lot of what had preceded it would have been forgotten. Everyone would have been pretty happy. They would have gotten the Territorial Cup back. They would have gone to a bowl game. Things would have been looking on the up and up. Instead, the season, you know, came to a crashing halt, and then the coaches are all on the road recruiting already.
Sure, sure. And after a week of just a major debacle at Washington State.
Oh, Yeah, I mean, that was worse. I mean, you know, coming out of that game, I mean, it was sort of like, man, like, what is wrong with these guys? They're just, you know, it was one of those games where they weren't competitive at all, and you really had to kind of question their mental toughness.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you could kind of see it coming because Utah had won earlier in the day, eliminating them from the Pac-12 South race. It was cold. You know, you kind of got that sense that maybe they didn't want to be there, and then they played that way.
Right.
And then they totally flipped the switch, which is exactly what I thought was going to happen. Thought, you know, that they were certainly capable of doing that. Despite missing a lot of guys in the secondary, they had a great defensive game plan, I thought, early. Stuffed the run. Were able to kind of force Manny Wilkins into some uncomfortable must-pass situations. They ran the ball really well. Even as I sit here today, I still have trouble wrapping my head around what happened Saturday.
Right, right. You and everybody else. After playing so well for 50 minutes.
Yeah, right. I mean, in total control of the game, I sit here and look at some of these stats. I mean, they outrushed them by 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They outgained them by over 100 yards. They converted 9 of 18 third downs. ASU was only 4 of 12. You know, Benjamin, I know he scored 3 touchdowns. He had only 80 yards. He came in averaging about 130.
Yep.
N'Keal Harry had 4 catches for 55 yards and no touchdowns.
Non-factor.
Like, if I had told you before the game that all of those things would happen, you would have said Arizona wins by a couple touchdowns, right?
Sure. Well, the funny thing about it is, and I'm sure you talked about it where you guys were, because we were talking about it, and I tweeted about it, you get those field goals, those are points that you're going to need later, because they're in the red zone, they just couldn't convert, and you see it all the time. If those 3 points should have been 7 points, so those 4 points. And that happened 2 or 3 times.
Oh, yeah. You knew that would come back to haunt.
Yes,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
And then chasing the 2-pointers.
Yes.
I still don't understand that. I mean, I understand the basic idea of when you have scored to make it 19-7 that you'd like to be up by 14 points, but you don't do that in the second quarter.
No.
You know, you kick the extra point, you go up 20-7, you never know what's going to happen later in the game. I've always been a believer that you have your 2-point chart and you lock it up until the fourth quarter. You don't even look at it, you don't consult it. You just go for one, unless you've got some, you know, unless you've got some special trick plays that you had put into your game plan, or you're going to, you know, just be aggressive and go for two all the time. Otherwise, don't even look at that thing until the fourth quarter.
Right. And people, when you ask the question, still didn't know what the heck he was saying.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been asked in a different way, I guess. You know, you never know what the response is going to be. Sometimes, you need a little inside baseball here. I mean, sometimes I ask the question like in a really general way and mm-hmm. sometimes in a really specific way. And sometimes one way works and sometimes the other way works. But I don't know. I didn't really feel like whatever he said justified the decision that was made.
I don't think he had the answer for you. I just in any way you ask it, he would not have had the legitimate reason. Because I think there was no reason. I mean, he played – and he picked up 2 points on the safety.
They did, but if they had kicked those 2 extra points, they would have had 42.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No. Instead of 40, and then ASU would have tied the game at the end. And even if Josh Pollock misses that field goal, you still go to overtime and you still have a chance.
Sure, sure. In theory, yes. Circumstances could have been different. Do you have time to stick around for another 12 minutes or so after the break? Or if not, you can take off. Let me know.
I can stick.
Okay, great. We'll hear more from Michael Lev on the other side of the break. Thanks a bunch for listening. Standing in front of my mirror.
El Tour de Tucson is a premier cycling event in the United States. Many Tucsonans ride in it, and some ride their bikes to the event to watch. Why not get your bike ready for El Tour or for the ride in the race with parts, service, and accessories from Ajo Bikes, Arizona's family bike shop for recumbent, kids' bikes, mountain, street, and electric. Ajo Bikes, 1301 East Ajo, 294-1434, ajobikes.com.
Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized as the number one credit union across all of Arizona by Forbes. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer higher savings rates, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit HughesFCU.org/bestcreditunion. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself so you could save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
No more knowledgeable woman than Dawn English and her irresistible Tucson, food and culture in the Old Pueblo. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk. Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network. 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030, KVOI. We have our eye on the arts.
Welcome back to Eye of the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm Steve Rivera, the host, and on the phone with Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star. So you've covered football a long time. I'm sure you've seen some strange games. Where did this one rank?
Very. the reason I would put it near the top of the list is that it was also sudden. You know, I mean, I will admit, like, I was sitting next to my colleague Greg Hansen in the press box when it was 40-24, mm-hmm. I want to say, and mm-hmm. I said to him, like, why does this feel so tenuous
yep.
to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't know if it's just that, you know, Arizona fans are conditioned to disappointment or something, but you could sort of feel a sense of...
It wasn't over.
Dread is maybe too... Uh-huh. Yeah, right. I don't know if dread's too strong of a word, but... you know, it was more like cautious optimism.
I did the same thing to Anthony, and I was thinking in my head, how bad could it get if they score a touchdown, they have to score the two-pointer, and then they score another touchdown, and they score they have to score another two-pointer. How many times does that happen? Never.
Right, and not only when it was 40-24, you're thinking, okay, that's two scores.
Right.
They actually scored three more times.
Right. Right.
And, you know, the defense held them to a field goal. After the interception, I mean, it's just kind of a catastrophic series of mistakes that happened. I mean, how many times do you think Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor have executed that handoff without that happening?
Sure.
You know, and then it just happens in that one sequence. I'm sure that J.J. just feels terrible about it. He had a really interesting season. I mean, one of the most productive seasons in history for an Arizona running back, but he also fumbled six times this year, losing five of them. So, you know, that's going to be a big off-season theme for JJ to figure out how to you know have better ball security.
Sure.
But you know, just kind of difficult to really to wrap your head around the type. You know, how do you analyze that season of his?
Right. Right.
You know, like, so great. In terms of the overall production, and yet, that one flaw, which is obviously, you know, a big flaw if you're a running back.
Sure, sure. We'll do some evaluations in a bit. Aren't you lucky the game didn't start at 7:30 or 8, and you probably would have had to rewrite that lead a few times? Did you have to Saturday afternoon or no?
That would have been a complete nightmare, number one. Number two, I did have to do, when we do these quarterly updates, and I definitely rewrote the fourth quarterly update several times before submitting the final version. I had kind of a whole thing written about them winning and,
sure,
and awaiting a bowl berth and so forth, which is, you know, where things seem to be headed. But I was definitely among many who are glad that was an afternoon game and would certainly advocate having more afternoon games in the future.
Especially in UA football, it's very strange. Now let's go back to reevaluating. Poindexter had a fantastic year. Who would have thought?
Tremendous. I did have him on a list of like five potential breakout players this season before the year. I also had PJ Johnson on that list.
Yeah.
I wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
The other guys I had were Lucas Haversick, who was on track for a breakout until he ran into some trouble, and I still like his talent a lot. The others were Gary Brightwell and Stanley Berryhill, both of those guys I think have pretty bright futures here. But as far as Poindexter goes, yeah, I mean, he looks like an NFL player to me. I know he's not going to leave Arizona with the same types of numbers that some other guys produced who really haven't made it in the NFL, but I think he's got a unique skill set.
Yeah.
At 6'5". He's still an ascending player. I think a lot of it will come down to how fast he runs. You know, if he can run under 4.6 at 6'5", in the 40-yard dash, I think he'll have a chance.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's funny you talked about the kickers. Let's assume for a second that they didn't get to the 35, and they got to the 40, and they had what they had time-wise. You don't go with Pollock, do you?
No. I have no idea what the dividing line is. But I think if they had gained, let's say, no yardage on third down, which was at the, let's say, the 35-yard line, I'm going to look that up while we're talking here, I think it would have been Haversick.
For 52 to win it.
Yeah, they were at the, no, sorry, they were at the 31.
So it would have been 38.
That would have been a 48 or 49-yarder.
Yeah.
I'm guessing 45 might have been, you know, the max for Josh. And he certainly had the distance.
Yeah,
You could just see right off the boot that the ball was just kind of fading on him
right.
a little bit.
Right. So, you know, the yards or whatever.
Tough position, yeah, sorry, really tough deal for Josh because he had a great game. I mean, he had a career game.
Sure.
He had made all four field goal attempts, which is a career high, and really should have never been in that situation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And a good kid. I mean, you feel for these good kids who, you know, suffer these fates.
I feel for all of them. Like, as I was rewatching the game yesterday, I felt bad for the entire team because they had played so hard and they wanted to win so badly. They had invested so much. And then, you know, I don't think the coaching staff helped them out with their kind of conservative game planning and strategy in the fourth quarter. And then obviously the turnovers were just a killer.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to go here, but I'll ask the questions because I wouldn't. I think it's 50-50. What do you think with the coaching? Will Noah Mazzone return? What about the Yates? Will he return? I know these are tough questions that you can answer, but, you know, you'd be guessing probably.
Yeah. I'm okay. So just so we're clear, I'm not reporting any of this.
Yes.
But if you're asking me to guess, I think that Noah Mazzone is going to be back. And I'm not sure about Marcel Yates.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I know there was a lot of speculation about Noel maybe retiring or something to that effect, but I don't think Kevin Sumlin would have brought him over from Texas A&M if he thought he was just going to be a one and done. He's got a quarterback coming in here in Grant Gunnell, the all-time leading passer in the history of Texas high school football, who he's got a really strong relationship with. And it would really surprise me if he left before Grant arrived. Marcel's a different story. I mean, he did work with Kevin Sumlin in the past, but, you know, Kevin didn't, you know, add him to the coaching staff or bring him. He inherited Marcel. He decided to keep him. The defense has kind of improved incrementally over the last 3 years, but I don't think anyone is satisfied with the finished product. And when you see a performance like the one at Washington State, where they're just like completely helpless. I mean, they knew what was coming. They know what kind of scheme Washington State runs. They had 2 weeks to prepare for it, and they looked totally unprepared. So,
right.
I don't know. That one to me is really up in the air, but I think we're going to find out fairly soon one way or the other.
Right, right. So now we have about 3.5 minutes left. But so what kind of grade would you give each of those, Yates and then Mazzoni?
Yeah.
That's tough. I know it's very tough.
I'd say, yeah, it is tough. I would say that Noel's maybe in the B-minus range for the season, and people are probably going to say that that's too high. But they did end up, I don't know if they end up leading the league in rushing or not, but they were really up there once again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had to adapt to Khalil Tate, who is an immensely talented player and maybe difficult to coach at times. Because he's such an amazing athlete, with such a strong arm, who kind of, you know, feels like he can do Superman type things.
Yeah.
Out there. But the offense was pretty darn productive, bottom line. Defensively, I'd give a lower grade, maybe like a C-. For Marcel, I know they had some injuries, to some guys like Jace Whitaker, Dottie Young Jr., Justin Belknap, but most of the players were back on defense.
Yeah.
They didn't have to learn a new scheme. And I just feel like they should have performed better. There were just a handful of games where, you know, the offense was struggling a little bit and the defense needed to keep them in it. I mean, specifically Houston, you know, USC, Utah, and Washington State. I know that everything works together, as Kevin Sumlin likes to say, but there are times, you know, when maybe one unit's not working where the other one needs to step up, and the defense did not do that
right
in those games. And that was a big disappointment.
Right, right. It's funny you talked about Khalil being this fantastic athlete, which he, of course, he is, and Mazzoni, and they're trying to eat. I don't know if curtail is the right word or whatever, but last season under Rich Rod, he ad-libbed a lot, and he did really well with that in that stretch where he was great. This year, not so much, because you can tell he didn't want to run. He just didn't want to run for whatever reason. I think maybe you even asked questions of this early, maybe a month into it. What's the deal? And someone said, well, you see what I see. And it was very bizarre. I mean, because maybe it's because maybe Khalil is strong-headed and he wanted to do what he wanted to do.
I think that's definitely part of it, for sure. And I think the injury was a part of it, too. He just didn't have confidence in his body and his ability to do the things that he normally does. I can kind of compare it to like a track star. You know, if a great sprinter has one little hamstring tweak or one little calf tweak, like it's like they can really tell that they're just not quite right.
Right.
And when you're used to being able to run as fast as Khalil Tate can, like he can tell, like, man, something's not right. Like I can't turn the corner the way that I normally can. So I think that was in his head as well.
Right, right. Well, great to have you on, Michael Lev. We'll probably do this again maybe during UA baseball season. But thanks for the insight, because I know a lot of people don't get to know what goes on with a reporter behind the scenes, and I hope we explained it.
All right, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Sure, Michael. Well, that's hour one today on Monday. We'll be back on the other side with Doug Haller from Phoenix and The Athletic. Thanks for listening.